Welcome back to Podcast Recovery, everyone. We are your hosts, David O.
And Eric B.
Today, we are joined by our special guest, Shelby. How are you doing today?
Doing good.
Good.
Cool. Where are you?
Thanks. Good.
Yeah.
Nice cool. Add in there, buddy. Cool. Where are you from, Shelby?
I'm from Westminster, Maryland, but I grew up in Eldersburg, where we are right now.
Cool.
Sweet.
All right. And when were you first introduced to recovery?
I was first introduced to recovery back in high school, but I didn't get clean until 2013.
All right. And how long have you been clean?
I've been clean 5 years and 7 months and a couple of days.
Nice. All right. Well, that's awesome. And with all that out of the way, we're going to turn it over to you. So pitter-patter, let's get at her.
All right. So I guess start with some of my story. Growing up, I had, a pretty normal childhood. Parents were divorced when I was, 18 months old, so that was just normal, and...
That's pretty normal for everyone nowadays.
Right. I kind of liked it, because I got 2 Christmases, 2 birthdays, more presents.
Nice.
You know. But from a really young age, I've always had, anxiety, and even as a little kid, my mom would tell me stories about how I would get upset and run and throw myself into a wall as a kid. I'm like, I wonder how much that has to do with how I am now. I never felt right in my own skin, ever since I was a little kid. I was really shy. Kindergarten, they thought something was wrong with me because I wouldn't talk to anybody.
Hmm.
Other than my own emotional stuff, my childhood was pretty good. Growing up, I had, a couple of close friends, just these girls. I actually still talk to them, which is cool. But I always felt they didn't really like me, or, I didn't have as much money as they did to afford, the cool clothes. And, I always felt less than. the first thing that I ever did addictively, so I'll go back for a second. I also struggled with mental health issues, and that came up at a young age, before I ever touched a drug for the first time in middle school. So I was about 12 or 13, and the first thing I ever did addictively was self-harm. So I would, I learned it from a little high school boyfriend I had who was the love of my life, and his older brother had some issues, and he learned it from his brother, and I saw him cut with cuts on his wrist, and was what's that, and then I remember the day I tried to do it myself, and I felt a release,
Yep.
And that was right when I was starting to really feel my depression and anxiety, and I'd later be diagnosed bipolar. So it was a release. I would do it. The endorphins would come out, and it was just any drug. I would count the days I could go without doing it, would make little tally marks, and then always go back to it. I'd wear long sleeves in the summertime, which I would years later for other reasons. I remember my mom finding out, it was Christmas when I was 13, and I was hot, but I wouldn't take off my sweater, and that's the first time she found out, because she made me take it off. And
yeah.
So from a young age, I was in outpatient programs for mental health stuff, and so I went to my first one of those in 8th grade. But quickly after that, maybe just a couple months, the first, and this is kind of weird, but I like to share about it because I don't hear it a whole lot, but, the first thing I ever did to get high, other than a cigarette, was triple C's or cough medicine.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Shut up, Eric. Why are you laughing?
Sorry.
Why are you laughing? That's not funny.
It's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny, yeah. Come on, triple C's.
Yeah.
It's a little funny.
I mean, yeah, that's a little kid thing.
I know, I just remember high school, triple C's, high school.
All right, fair enough.
Go together.
Right. Yeah, so that was middle school.
Mm-hmm.
But But I remember you didn't have to be 18 to buy them back then. And, like,
yeah.
Me and the little boyfriend went up to Food Lion and got a pack and took like six or something, which was not a lot, but I was tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember, like, all my anxiety went away. I was in this whole different world. Like, it was perfect. I'm like, mm-hmm. I need this, you know? And, you know, as soon as we started to come down, I asked him, like, well, when can we do it again? And he was like, calm down. I don't know. I'm like, I was, like, completely concerned with doing it again right off the bat.
Yeah.
So, and I like to share, like that, like cough medicine and all that, like I did that all throughout my addiction, all towards the end,
yep.
You know, like it was like probably my number two drug of choice, which I don't hear a whole lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, you know, I started with that and then high school, you know, like, I guess, you know, I look back and it's somewhat like the fun days.
Mm-hmm.
So both my parents got divorced for a second time from my step-parents. And
I was like, wait, they remarried and got divorced again?
No, yes. Okay. They both it. Not like to each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so my mom was like a single parent of me. And when I was 7, I got my first younger sister. And then when I was 10, I got a younger brother and a younger sister from each parent. So I went from being an only child to having three younger ones real quick.
Mm.
And so my mom, you know, worked, she worked a lot and wasn't home a whole lot. And I was a horrible child, like a horrible, I was like pissed off at the world, like goth kid, like hated going to school, like. My mom would try to discipline me, like, I would not have it. Like, I had the total upper hand, and she did the best that she could with me, because I was, like, really unpleasant. But, so, bottom line, I had, like, the party house, and, you know,
You do not seem unpleasant, though.
I was very different when I was very angry.
Like, you look so sweet. Like, okay.
The angst was real.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, then I was, like, wild, you know, like, I was 90 pounds soaking wet and, like, would out-drink my friends and, like, just chug vodka in the bathrooms and, like, whatever. Ugh. Gross. Bartons. So I had, like, the party house and another friend of mine had another party house. We were always either at my house or his house. And, you know, the first time I got drunk, it's just, like, a tribute to me being an addict. I got drunk off 151 and Barton's vodka. Like, at that time, I had a boyfriend that I met at the fourth floor, which is a psych hospital. At the local hospital.
I was like, what?
Yeah, I met him up in the psych ward and, like, you know, he was perfect.
Yeah.
So.
That's a match made in heaven.
It's a good place to meet.
Yeah.
Right. So he was in, like, a group home because he set his high school bathroom on fire by accident.
By accidentally accident? On purpose, yeah.
He lit a paper towel on fire and then threw it away because he was smart.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So we're drunk as shit. We get somebody to break him out of his house arrest and pick him up from Westminster. And, like, I don't even know. I woke up. I don't remember any of it. But I was like, yeah, like, that was great, you know? And, like, I just remember when I was, like, drinking. I remember this, like, one particular memory. Like, we had, like, an adult who would let us go over their house and party also, which is a whole other story.
Mm-hmm.
He was fine. He was, like, there's nothing wrong with him. He had his own. He's, like, one of us, you know?
Yeah.
But I just remember being in his basement, and, like, I had drank, and I just first started to feel the alcohol and just was like, this is so great. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm so confident. Like, why can't I feel like this all the time? So, you know, I was always, like, my friends and I would party a lot. Like, a lot, you know, and I kind of thought it was normal, but I knew we were a little bit more wild than the average.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always, like, the friend who was like, if we got together and we couldn't get alcohol or we couldn't get weed or whatever, like, I was really upset, and I was obsessing on how can we get it? Like, what are we going to do now? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
When they were like, let's just watch a movie. And I was like, no. you know, and so, like, throughout high school, just partied a lot, did a lot of psychedelics. So at one point, had, like, this group of, like, hippies living in my basement, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
And the one guy had acid, and we just took acid, like, every weekend the summer I was 17. So that was great. And, like, looking back, like, I guess it was very unmanageable. Like, I barely went to high school. I was on, like, an attendance contract. I missed, like, over 90 days of my senior year. Like, barely graduated. I think they just wanted me out of there.
Yeah.
But compared to, like, when my using got really bad, those were the fun days.
Yeah.
So I graduated high school just barely. And, like, right that year was, like, the year that I turned 19 was, like, when things really went downhill. Mm. And, like, my addiction progressed really fast and really quick, really hard. So a big part of my story is, throughout, like, my heavy active addiction, I was also in, like, a relationship, not the fourth floor guy, but another guy, and I actually stole him from my best friend, which was great.
Ooh, not cool.
Yeah, and later she thanked me. She's like, because we're like, all right. She stole my best friend, but yeah, it was bad. You know, it started out, so it started out like that, and then, like, it was really, really mentally and physically abusive, and I was severely codependent, like, really bad, and also using hard drugs, like, with him, so it was all tied in together.
Mm-hmm.
He started, of course, you know, like any good addict, he moved into my house after we'd been together for, like, 2 weeks.
Of course. Yep.
Because he was kicked out of his parents' house. And then it didn't take very long at all for him to get kicked out of my house because he was, honestly, and I don't, like, say this to be judgy, but, like, I really believe he was a sociopath.
Mm.
So, you know, he was just real nasty. He went off and, like, screamed at my mom over something. I don't even remember what it was. Threw our fish tank into the yard, freaked out, was punching walls.
What the fuck?
How are the fish?
The fish died.
He killed the fish?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He was crazy.
What kind of fish were they?
It was guppies.
Whoa. Guppies? Is that like a specific... Is that a specific type of fish?
Are you talking
fish?
Yes. Like...
Really?
Do you get those at like the carnival? Like guppies?
No, those are goldfish,
those
dude.
Those goldfish? Yeah. I don't fucking know.
I don't know what guppies are. I'm going to Google it. Continue your story.
I feel like they're guppies in like... elementary school. I feel like
they're like a specific type of fish. Fun facts: later in my progression with him, we bred guppies.
Oh, so like these?
Yes, they're pretty.
Oh yeah, they're very pretty.
And he killed them because he's an ass.
He killed a whole bunch of guppies, motherfucker. Okay, so anyway, he's yelling at mom. He's throwing guppies. He's punching walls. Continue.
Right, and this is like a month into my relationship with him.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And within 2 months in the relationship with him, he had pinned me down and choked me and, bit me, left a mark. And at that point, like, I'll just say, like, before I met him, like, I was probably at one of the, like, it was the start of the lowest part of my life. I had, like, zero self-worth, zero sense of who I was. I used to, it's really strange, but like I kept a journal from when I was like in fifth grade until I got clean and I stopped journaling for whatever reason. But I remember one of the first times I really realized that my using was an issue was like I was journaling and I was like, I don't remember the last day that I wasn't high on something. Like, I don't remember.
Mm.
And it was scary, but I was like, whatever, fuck it. Like, you know, I can't. I gotta keep going. So I was already, like, in a really dark place when I met him. And we would get high. He had a big bottle of morphine. And he
of
had
course.
Gotten yeah. for some really cheap price. And, like... I had taken, like, a Vicodin once in high school, but that was, like, the extent of my opiate experience. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. Like, and like, I didn't realize, like, I didn't think I was going to get addicted. You know, I didn't, you know, I'm like, it's not heroin. So, and like, we started taking those every day. So like from the get with him, I was taking pills, like from the get go. And so when we were high on opiates, it was, of course, like, oh, I love you. You're my soulmate. Everything is so great. You know, like, it was this, like, ridiculous, like, yeah, like, high love, you know. And I thought that was real. So, like, I had to hold on to that, you know. So, you know, the pills ran out eventually. I was sick. I'm like, fuck, you know. And that... I was with him for almost 5 years. It was like 4.5 years. And
is this the guppy guy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. You stayed with him?
I did.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was like, I was, you know, I was one of the people who would say, like, if anyone ever lays a hand on me, like, they're gone. Like, I never thought that I would go through that.
Yeah.
And it's not until you're in that situation and your sense of reality is so warped. Like, I was in such deep denial. Yeah. I thought that he was just this, like, mentally ill individual, and, like, he needed me, and like, I needed to stay with him, and I could fix him. Mm. And, you know, he was really good underneath of all the bad. And if people could just see that. And I had just completely deluded myself into thinking that he was something that he never was.
Yeah.
But I had this thing in my head that I held on to. Mm. And, you know, it took me over, I had over a year clean before I ever even told anybody that he was physically abusive, or told anybody, like, the guppy story, or, like, any of the crazy shit. Because I was so ashamed that I signed up for that for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, I've shared about it, and people come up to me after I share about it and are like, wow, I'm going through the same thing, or, like, I've been through that. Like, thank you for being honest. So, and I've, like, forgiven myself for it now, which is great. You know, not all the time, but for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I know I was really sick at that period of my life. So, you know, with the opiates, it, for the next 4 years, it was... You know, taking pills and then getting on Suboxone for a couple of months and just smoking weed. And I thought I was okay. And then something would happen or nothing would happen and I'd get high again, like on opiates. And,
Now, was it Suboxone, like, with, like, intent to, like, actually not use opiates anymore, or just, like, not be, like, dope sick?
Well, it started, the first time I got prescribed it, it started out with the intent of not using opiates anymore, but I quickly realized that, A, I could sell them while I was using opiates, B, I could use them to not get sick.
Yeah.
So it was just totally...
It just became another part of the fold.
Mm-hmm. It was just a tool I used to help me get high easier, not get ill. So, you know, I was voluntarily homeless at 19, because, you know, I mentioned that my mom kicked him out of the house, and I was, like, so, like so wrapped up and addicted to him, and I was like, well, fuck you, if he can't stay, then I'm leaving, which is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It's, like, crazy, but, so I was voluntarily homeless for, like, 2 weeks. It wasn't, like, anything insane. Yeah, it wasn't, like, I wasn't in Baltimore City. I was in Westminster, which is, for anyone listening, it's, like, Carroll County is a very rural area. Mm-hmm. It's not very extreme, but...
So you spent a couple weeks couch surfing.
I couch surfed, and I stayed under a bridge for a couple days.
Nice!
Very interesting, the characters you meet.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Huh. That's pretty rad.
Yeah,
I thought Carroll of it. County.
Especially in Carroll County. That's crazy.
I know what to expect in Baltimore City, but what do you see in under a bridge in Carroll County?
There was this one guy. He was like an old guy, and he was just drunk all the time. But he had like a Bratz doll pillow that he carried around with him, and like I don't know, it was just weird people.
I've slept on some park benches, but never, and definitely some cars, but never under a bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I need to go back out and sleep under a bridge.
I know. I thought of it like I'm on an adventure. I'm so badass.
Yeah,
like,
just for shits and gigs. Do it for the story.
Do it for the gram.
Yeah. Do it for the Vine, bro.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Sorry, anyway.
I loved Vine.
Oh yeah, it was great.
So, anyways, so eventually, like everybody, you know, pills got too expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a lot of wild stories with the pills. Like,
yeah, of course.
You know, we had. So I won't even get into it, but it got too expensive. The pills we liked, they changed mm-hmm. how they were made, you know. Yep. So I had tried heroin once, and I snorted it. And this is, like, another, like, weirdo me thing. Like, I snorted it, and I just remember crawling around on my floor and being like, if God has a body, this is what it feels like. But then, like, I did it a second time, and it wasn't, I guess it wasn't good shit or whatever. I wasn't impressed. I like the pills better. But, so, like, I, you know, started doing heroin, you know, snorting it at first. And then I remember I was living with my grandmother at that time, and, you know, he had flipped out on them. Like, for a little while, he was allowed at my grandparents' house, but he had flipped out on them, you know, my grandparents, you know, like...
Yeah, what the fuck?
And so, like, I lived in the basement, and there was a stairwell. And so I remember one night, it was January 2012, I was trying to sneak him in. And my grandmother doesn't take any shit. Like, she doesn't take any shit.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a window, like, right above the stairwell. And it's, like, midnight, so I didn't think she'd be awake. And... I'm sneaking him in down the stairwell, and I hear just knock, 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 like a police knock, like at the window, and she's just standing there, like glaring at me. I'm like, oh shit. And I realized, like, you know, I was gonna have to deal with that, or I was gonna leave with him. So I went in my room, grabbed my comforters, pillows, and went with him in my car. So, and that night, so Carroll County, we went behind like a grocery store, and he's like, I know this girl who can get heroin. I was like, okay, call her. And it's so cool. She's clean now. I just saw her at a meeting.
Nice.
It's so awesome. But anyways, so he left with her to go get the heroin. I waited, and they came back, and he was like really fucked up. And she was like, do you want me to shoot you up? And I was, like, one of the people who, like, would look away at movies. Like, I couldn't stand it. I was, like, petrified of needles. Couldn't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, like, you know, in that moment, I was just, like, sure. You know, I want to feel how he looks. So go ahead and do it.
Wow.
And, you know, after that night, it just was off to the races. It was just, like, really bad, really fast, worse than it had been ever. And I had like arrests, and he was always getting arrested, and like it was like in and out of courts and blah blah blah.
Oh, yeah.
Before that, it was not good, but just adding that aspect into it, like, it got real bad real fast. So like so we were living in my car in January, and, you know, going down to the city to Cobb. We didn't really go. We went to, like, I think, like, Parkville to Cobb. There was, like, one guy that we knew. Yeah.
To Parkville?
I think that's where it was. It was, like,
the
right at...
The mean
was,
streets like, of Parkville.
Not Park Heights.
No.
Parkville.
Like, wherever Lockraven Boulevard is.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that... We went there... from there to Eldersburg and back, like, a couple times a day. I did Cobb to Park Heights once, so I can say I did it. But anyways... you know, so I started to, you know, I lie, cheat, steal, like, pawned everything that I could possibly find, you know, stole from my family, pawned all their stuff. My grandmother, like, had to, like, lock all her bedroom doors and stuff if I was in the house. And I put them through so much, you know, like, my grandparents were there through the thick of it, you know, because they kept letting me come back. Like, when I would, you know, most of the time I wanted to be with him, but, it was just really bad. So one of the worst using stories I have, well, I guess I'll share, So let me think. Yeah. So we had been using, and he had a court case coming up, and I don't even know, understand now, because I've been to like sponsees court cases and it doesn't work like this, but he had gotten charged, and in preparation for that had put a bunch of sleeping medicine and Xanax in his pocket, like loose, in case he needed to take it when he got charged to send to jail. And
wait, like what?
Yeah.
Emergency drugs, dude.
Yeah, like a pocket full of drugs that like he was prescribed.
I understand it, but it's also like one of the dumbest fucking things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
So so somehow they, when they charged him, they let him go out into the waiting area where I was and let him give me his like phone and stuff, because I guess they knew us. I don't know, like they don't do that. I don't know why they did that.
No, the bailiff like comes and they
the bailiff took him out and let him give me his stuff. It was weird. But he reached in his pocket to take a handful of the pills, and like some of them fell on the ground. There's like a scuffle between him and the bailiff. He gets a whole bunch and takes some, and they cart him away. And like our routine was like he'd get arrested. He had like a good job, so like he always had money.
Wait, and what was he doing? Wait.
What?
Yeah. What was his job?
Electrician work.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
He went to, he didn't have like one job. He'd go from company to company, but like they pay pretty well. So, so like, you know, we didn't have to worry about that most of the time. So the routine was he'd get arrested and then I'd go bail him out and then we'd carry on business as usual. So I'm like waiting for the phone call, you know, waiting, I don't hear anything, starting to get worried. So I didn't even remember like if it was Sykesville Police, Westminster Police, Maryland State Police. I didn't remember which.
Yeah.
So I'm calling all of the police stations, asking. Finally, I get somebody who knows who I'm talking about, and they're like, oh, well, he was found unresponsive in his cell, so we took him to the hospital. So I was like, oh, shit. So I drove up to the hospital. He was alive. But he had, like, overdosed on all the pills. And so, like, I popped a Suboxone and stayed in the hospital with him overnight. And they had this liaison from one of the treatment centers was going to, like, get him into treatment that day instead of jail. So we're like, oh, this is cool. And then so I'm in the hospital room with him after he had woken up the next day and talked to this liaison and all of that. And and another, like, super smart thing, like, sarcasm. he told me to put, like, a Xanax in my hoodie pocket. So, like, when he leaves, he could, like, hug me and, like, get it from me. Which is, like, so stupid. Like, how's that going to work?
That's kind of genius, though.
It didn't work.
Oh, really?
No.
Huh.
So, like, he was in the bathroom. I'm in the room. These cops show up. And so I open the bathroom. I'm like, there's cops here. And he's like, okay, put it in your pocket. And I was like, okay. So he came out of the bathroom and they were starting to arrest him. And he tries to do the hug and the Xanax thing. And like the cops saw it, of course.
Yeah.
Started choking him out. And I was like, I was not like how I am now. I was really like not pleasant person, like I said. And I was like, get your fucking hands off him. Blah, 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 stupid pig. And like yelling at the cop. And finally, they cart him away, and then some of the cops stay in the room and put me in handcuffs, and I'm like, what the hell did I do? Like, what?
Oh, shit.
Meanwhile, my car that we're living out of is in the parking lot, so, you know, that has a lot of stuff in it. So they handcuff me, they take my purse, which I thought I was fine, but they emptied it out on the hospital bed, and they found one little orange needle cap. You know, and they're like, oh, ho, what's this? Because they knew what it was, and I somehow had it in my purse. Mm-hmm. And so I was paraded down through the hospital at, like, probably 12 noon in front of everybody in handcuffs. They took me to my car and proceeded to search my car, which, like I said, we had been living out of. So I had...
Everything.
Everything. I had a box of like 125 needles that I was like, I'm going to buy in bulk.
That seems legitimate. Okay.
It's the smart way to go.
Yeah, I had had it for like a day too, so it was a lot. I had the used needles, I had drugs, I had my Suboxone, I was prescribed Adderall, I had that. I had a weed in a bowl, even though I never even, like, that was not a priority at that point. But yeah. I had it in my car. You know, they found everything that they could. So in the end, I was charged with 12 drug charges and one interfering with arrest, I believe. It was either 12 or 13.
Wow.
All in one day, yeah. So they took me off to central booking, and that was severely, like, unpleasant. I, like, illed in central booking. It was, like, May, so I had, like, a tank top and shorts on.
Oh, and it's always, the temperature is never regulated in those places in any way whatsoever.
I was freezing. I was trying to use toilet paper as, like, a blanket.
Oh, my God, I've done that.
Yeah.
I've done that.
So.
It doesn't work, Eric.
I don't think it would.
So I was in there for 13 hours. And I thought, like, it was going to go as usual, that they let me out and I'd have to bail him out. Well, they let him out, but some other charge that I don't even understand to this day because I was just so fucked up all the time and I don't know what we were even doing with our lives. There was some charge that made it so, like, he wasn't allowed to contact me because this woman we were buying pills from called the cops and said that he was stealing from my purse and like that made it to an actual charge. I don't even know. So like he couldn't even like, I couldn't call him. He couldn't call me. So he couldn't bail me out. I don't even know if he would have because he was, you know,
yeah.
I don't know if he would have. But I finally got to like the commissioner and he wanted me to go upstairs and I took my phone call and called my grandmother like crying, screaming, like begging her to bail me out, even though I had been, like, nothing but a terror in her life. Yeah. You know, she did not have to do that at all. But she did. You know, she bailed me out and took me to my car. And I don't even think I said thank you to her. You know, I was just so focused on, like, okay, I gotta get high. Like, I feel horrible. So I got back to my car, immediately go straight down to his house, you know, even knowing, like, I'm not supposed to talk to him, and then go straight down to the city to get high right after all of that. And then we went, he lives, like, back in the woods, so there was, like, a spot we could park and get high, and we also, like, lived in the woods a lot of times, too. So we got high, and then the liaison person actually pulled through for him, so he went to treatment. So I was in my car, running out of drugs. I was on the phone with my dad, for some reason, trying to explain to him why heroin should be legal. I remember that, because I was just so, like, I was so out there, like, so out there. I thought, it's my business. I should be able to do what I want, blah, blah, blah. I was like, it's better than alcohol. I'm like, oh, my God. So, and then, like, I ran out of drugs and hit up this girl. I waited tables throughout, like, my using. I'd go from one job to another because I would call out all the time. Yeah. And then I'd quit before they fire me or they would fire me. But I called this girl I waited tables with to see if she had anything. And she's like, yeah, come up the road. And I did. Granted, I hadn't been home at all since any of this happened. Like, same clothes for, like, 48 hours, like, whatever. Mm. I mean, that was normal, but,
yeah.
You know. I drive up to this town, Tawny Town, which is, like, about half an hour from where I was, and got some pills from her. And then on my way back, I had, like, this stuffed dog that the boyfriend had gotten me, and it was, like, in the back seat of my car. And I was just, like, and I had gotten high, but, like, in for a long time, I was, like, this didn't happen because I was high, but I was just well, you know, at that point, it was, like, I was just getting high to get well. But, so I was driving back to Eldersburg, on this 50-mile-per-hour road, and, like, I passed the road that I would have gone to go to his house, and I was all sad because he was gone and blah, blah, blah. So I reached, like, behind my seat to get this stuffed dog, And I guess my hand on the steering wheel, like, moved, like, kind of moved, and I lost control of my car. And it was, like, 55 miles per hour road. Lost control of my car, went over the double yellow line and flipped my car and landed upside down on the side. It's Route 97, like, on this hill.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I was able to unbuckle, like, crawl out of the broken window. I had a cigarette in my hand, and I just remember I was shaking, and the cigarette was broken in a 90-degree angle, and I just was like, what is my life? And people saw it happen, so this, like, lady came right away, and, like, that was one of the first. I always, like, was okay with spirituality because I was brought up in a really open-minded home. Like, my mom, like, Native American spirituality and Wicca and stuff, so, like, I never really had a problem with all that, but that was one of the first times that I felt like a higher power was looking out for me, because there's no reason I should have, like, lived through that, let alone not had any injuries, no concussion. I had a couple scratches. So they took me to they took me to the hospital. Next day when we when the police showed up, so the accident, it was the same officer I had dealt with the entire day before.
Shut up.
Yeah. So he's like, got anything new in there? I'm like, no.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I actually got arrested by the same cop twice.
Yeah.
So that, the second round is always kind of an interesting interaction.
Yeah. So, like, after I went to the hospital and got released, like, I went to the tow yard, saw that car, and the whole hood was crushed in except for where I was sitting. Like, it was insane.
Mm.
You know, it took us hours to get everything out of the car because I'd been living in it. My only priority was to find the pills that I had hidden in this camera case. You know.
Of course.
Found them, went in the bathroom at the tow truck, took them. And then, like, a couple days later, I went to treatment. It wasn't the first time, but the first time I only stayed for, like, 3 days. And was like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
So I'd like to say that was the end of my using. It wasn't. I went to treatment. I'm talking for a long time. Oh, sorry.
All right, you're good.
I went to treatment. Didn't take it seriously. Stayed for 2 weeks. Left the day I got out. I got high. Went hard again for another 2 months, and then I went to treatment for, like, the last time, and it was because, like, they had given me a drug test at my IOP on, like, a Tuesday, and I thought I was good, you know, I could use now, but then they decided to, like, drug test me again on Wednesday, or Thursday, after I had gotten high on Wednesday, and I was like, well, I don't have to go. And I, like, maintained that for, like, 4 hours. Like, I don't have to go. I was, like, dying. And the counselor was like, this is going to look really bad in court, so you should probably just go to inpatient. And at that point, I was, like, so broken and, like, so just exhausted that I was like, okay, whatever. So I did. I went to treatment. Something was different. You know, something shifted in my head, and I started to listen, not just laugh it off like this is all a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember, like, laughing for the first time and, like, having fun for the first time since I was a kid without any substances, and that was so important to me. And I stayed the whole 28 days. I didn't want to go home. I was scared. You know, I didn't want to go back to what I was doing. And, you know, when I got home, I stayed in my room for, like, a week. Didn't talk to anybody. And my mom had reached out to this woman that we had both used to work with, who she knows that I went to 12-step recovery meetings. And she's like, hey, do you still go to these meetings? Because Shelby just got home, and she's, like, not leaving the house, and I feel like she should probably go to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman was like, yeah, I'll pick her up tomorrow. And so, like, I, like, that was just, that was such, like, that was my higher power working in my mm-hmm. life completely, because I don't know if I'd be alive if it wasn't for that, you know, because mm-hmm. I was too terrified to go to the meeting by myself. Like, I didn't, you know, so I made this woman my sponsor, like, went with her to meetings, like, all the time. We'd go to out-of-area meetings. We had so much fun. And, like, you know, I stayed clean for 6 months, but I still wouldn't give up the boyfriend. Mm. You know, he was in police custody at a treatment center, so he couldn't leave. Mm. But when that ended, he had no desire to stay clean and was getting high. And... you know, I stopped talking to people because I didn't want to hear what they would have to say because I knew they were right. I tried. Mm. I'd go to meetings. I would hear something and I'd say, I got to tell so-and-so about this. Like, he needs to read this or he needs to talk to this guy. I didn't, like, work on myself. I was doing it all for him.
You're trying to get him clean?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yep, I really, really tried to get him clean. And it ended with me being so frustrated that one night I was like, fuck it. And I bought a bottle of wine and drank the whole thing and then ended up with a needle in my arm that night. And so that relapse was worse than, like, any of my previous using because I had a head full of 12-step knowledge and knowing that there was a better way of life mm-hmm. and a body full of drugs. And it was horrible. Like, you know, that keeps me clean today. So, like, thankfully, like, I was only out for, like, a month, and I came back, I just came back to the meetings, I, like, detoxed myself, and, like, there's, that would have been my clean day, but I'll get into that quickly in a minute, but, like, after about 3 months, I was willing to, like, really... because I was at that point, I was like, I can't do that again. Like, I need to listen to take suggestions mm-hmm. and, like, do what these people are telling me to do. So, like, it took me about 3 months, but I got rid of the boyfriend, you know, and that was really hard. But that was, like, one of the most liberating things I've ever done in my life, ever. Because I was clean and, like, I realized I don't need to put myself through this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't change at all. And I did. And I realized I do have worth. And I don't need to sign up for this crazy shit that keeps happening. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard, but it was, like, amazing. You know, it was the biggest pink cloud ever, like, getting to know myself. You know, like I said before, I was kind of goth kid in, like, high school. and I've dyed my hair, like, every color you could think of. And he didn't like that. So, like, I didn't do that for, like, 2 years. I took out all my facial piercings and whatnot. I remember we broke up and, like, I dyed my hair black. I'm natural blonde. Pierced my tongue again. Like, I was just, like, so liberated, you know? Like, I could get to know myself and, like, know what I like. Mm-hmm. And, like, not, you know, and then I had this experience and these boundaries that I don't ever have to sign up for that again. And I haven't, you know? So, so, like, one thing... I'll fast forward a little bit because I've talked for a long time, but one thing I was not honest about was when I had about 4 months clean, I was having wisdom teeth pain, and so I stole some Tramadol from my grandmother for the wisdom teeth pain, not to get high, but I did. I stole it from her, and... told a half-truth to my sponsor when I was going to celebrate, so that my Nana had given them to me. And she was like, well, I think that's okay. I mean, it's up to you. But I kept that hidden inside me for years. I celebrated for 3 years knowing that I had done this thing and just telling myself, well, I didn't do it to get high. Like, it's not like an actual opiate, blah, blah, blah. But I knew I was full of shit. And when I finally went over my fifth step, it just came out. I just told my sponsor and changed my clean date. So that's why my clean date now is September 30th, 2013. And that was amazing because it's like through step work, I don't have any secrets, nothing that my sponsor doesn't know or like I wouldn't be willing to tell her. I don't have anything weighing me down anymore. And... you know, and I used, when I was growing up, like, I hated myself. Like, I lived in, like, self-loathing. And one of the biggest things recovery's given me is that, like, I don't ever, like, hate myself anymore. Like, I'm not, like, brimming with love and acceptance for myself all the time. But, like, it's so much better than it was. you know, I've, like... got a sponsor. I've had a couple sponsors, and been working steps and just getting really involved with my fellowship and have a great network of people that, like, I trust. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just, life is so much different now. I don't know. It's just, I'm drawing a blank, but it really is, like, beyond my wildest dreams. It really is. Like, today, like, I own a house. I'm in, like, a actual healthy relationship, which I didn't think existed in real life. you know, I have two dogs. I sponsor women. You know, lately I've been going through, like, well, one thing I've didn't share on is, like, I had an eating disorder growing up in high school, and, like, that has been something that I've had to, I've struggled with throughout recovery, because I gained like 15 pounds when I got clean, and then I quit smoking, and gained a lot of weight, and I was just very unable to accept myself, and the last thing I'll share about, because it ties in with that, but, about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, I lost my uncle to this disease. And he had gone missing for a week. It turns out he had passed away the day he went missing, but we didn't know. Mm. There were, like, private investigators, or not private, but, like, investigators, like, mm-hmm. searching for him, everybody. It was so stressful. And they finally, thank God, none of our family members found him, but the investigator found him. He had been, like, by a river, so he'd been in, like, water and was, like, out.
Oh, God.
For, like, a week. And that's been really, really hard, because I've had a lot of deaths in recovery, but never somebody, like, my family is super close, and, like, it's somebody who has always been there, and he was 13 years older than me, so he was always, like, closest to me in age, and, like, I could relate with him. We listened to the same music, and, like, I wanted him to get clean so bad, and it was so hard. But, like, I didn't have to use over that. I did start smoking again when that happened, which is not smart. But yeah, so that, and through that process, my mother has gotten clean. Nice. She realized after all of that, that she really did have a problem. She's going to be celebrating a year on May 30th.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, my little sister is almost 3 years clean, because mm-hmm. She went through a horrific trauma, and when I, probably about 2015 or 16, I don't remember, and then she went and got clean. So now, like, I have a family in recovery. Like, I was always the black sheep. I was always the one with all the issues, and now, like, I'm the one who can, like, kind of be, like, a guide for them and, like, show them, you know, there's another way, and I'm so, so grateful for that, and so grateful I can be a big sister and be, like, a family member and be present in people's lives. You know, it's just the greatest gift of recovery's brought me. But yeah, so I think that's all, because I talk too much, but yeah, I think that's all I have. I'm just really grateful, and I'm glad you guys asked me to do this.
Yeah. Absolutely. We definitely have some questions for you.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'll start.
Yeah, I see you over there.
I'm going to start.
Go ahead.
I scribbled some stuff down. Okay. I'm going to start light. So we're both kind of heavy metal, harder music type people. For me, like, in active addiction, like, that heavy metal was really kind of like a grounding force for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I would, like, because a lot of the stuff they talk about is, like, stuff that, like, I felt and but it was, like, a source of, like, hope.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, did you, like, has hard music, like, it now transitioning into recovery, still given you, like, a grounding in your feelings that, like, hey, we still feel these fucked up feelings, but...
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and my music taste is, like, insane. Mm-hmm. But I love, like, you know, heavy emotional music. Not emo. I don't like emo. But yeah, music is a huge part of my life. Yep. Like, and it always has been a release for me. Yep. And just, like, a way of identifying with other people and escaping. But now in like a healthy way, and definitely.
All right, Eric, now I'll turn it over to you. Cool. For the real questions.
Yeah.
I have real questions too.
All right, let's start with eating disorders. So, you know, I guess we'll start with the first one, which is, what does a healthy relationship with food look like for you today?
So that's something I'm like still trying to figure out. I didn't go into it a lot, but I have a chronic illness that it's been a really new thing in my life, and it's really taken away a lot of my appetite. So right now it's like I have to kind of force myself to eat. And I actually gained weight from not eating, which was really irritating. My doctor said my body was in starvation mode, so when I did eat, it would hold on to, like, the unhealthy crap that I was eating. But, you know, I don't consciously act on my eating disorder now. Like, I allow myself to eat, but I really do have a hard time. Like, if I try to do, like, any of the diets or, like, eating healthy, I take it to an extreme. I take it to this obsession. Like, I need to control it.
Are you a restrictor?
I was, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that was my main thing, was anorexia when I was younger. And now it's really just the thoughts, you know, like the not feeling good enough because I've gained weight, or being afraid to quit cigarettes because I know I'll gain weight, which is crazy.
But yeah. So to follow up to that question, how do you cope with your own self-image when you have, you know, beyond, like you said, when you quit cigarettes, like when I quit cigarettes, I think I gained like 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's hard to like accept that 20 pounds. So how do you go about coping with like, this is me and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't need to control this situation, like, because I can accept who I am.
You know, I've just really tried to like tell myself those things, and I don't believe them all the time, but
yep.
Just telling myself like I think I had it on my mirror that like a little post-it that said like, your worth is not defined by your pant size.
Fucking A.
Because like growing up, I was a size zero, like 95 pounds my whole life. Didn't ever have to worry about what I was eating. And then, you know, you get older and you quit smoking. And mm-hmm. I got up to like 145 pounds, which is like more than I've ever been. And it was hard. But, you know, like I had to just try and keep remembering like that, you know, it doesn't change who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. All right. You said you dealt with, depression and anxiety, and all of us in this room did.
Mm.
Yes. Throwing you under the bus, Eric.
We haven't talked about my story. Don't know what you're talking about.
Fuck you. Am I wrong?
No, I went to treatment for that.
Okay. So anyway, all three of us dealt with depression and anxiety, certainly a part of our using. How have you, what have you done to work on your anxiety and your depression in recovery to grow through it?
Well, I see a therapist. I see a psychiatrist. I'm on mood stabilizer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done those things. I've also like tried, I don't do it as much as I should, but like meditation and yeah. mindfulness. You know, I suffer from panic attacks, so like I've gotten tools to try and work through those, like grounding techniques, and being mindful and like trying to like notice five things that are black in the room or two things that are red in the room, and like, and be, it sounds weird, but like focus on that.
Yeah.
And then suddenly like your anxiety is better. And I've also had breathing techniques that have helped a lot. So it's an ongoing process. It really is. But definitely my therapist is wonderful. Like, she actually moved to Florida and we do video therapy now because I like her so much. But
awesome.
But yeah, just I make it a huge priority to take care of those things, because if I don't, then I'm on the track to use, because that's a lot of the reason I used.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and I'm going to follow up with Eric a little bit and on that. What?
But go ahead.
Okay. So has step work helped you build up your own like self-worth and self-esteem, and like how has it done that for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just it's hard to explain how step work really works, but there's
yeah.
something about like just being gut level honest and you know, answering the questions and telling them to someone else and having that person be like, oh yeah, I did this and that, blah, blah, blah. And just learning my patterns and learning, you know, why I am the way I am, and currently trying to like accept myself and forgive myself when I act on character defects. Mm-hmm. And I just think like the honesty and putting it all out there and not holding anything back, and it just has helped tremendously, you know, definitely.
All right. Eric?
All right. So you were in a long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Oh, here it is.
What?
It's a codependency question.
Sort of. It's post-codependency question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what boundaries do you put on relationships? And this doesn't have to be romantic relationships, any relationship, today.
Definitely like no name calling. Just I won't take any kind of like abusive behavior at all. Like no shaming of any type. You know, none of that toxic stuff. You know, like thankfully my friends are awesome and I haven't had to deal with any like friendships that were like that. But like the relationship I'm in now, like I you know, laid it down. I said, you know, I have some friends that are guys. If that's going to be a problem with you, then it's going to be a problem with me. Because, like, some of my best friends from childhood are men.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, and women, but I still talk to some of them. And my ex would be so possessive and controlling. So I laid that down, you know, the no name calling, the if my boyfriend and I, if we have an argument, now, we do not ever go to bed angry. We don't ever end the conversation in a grudge. Like, we talk through it every single time. And I think that's just because he's an amazing person and because I've learned that, you know, learned how to be in a healthy relationship. And that was hard because at first, like, I thought, like, okay, when's he going to turn crazy? Like, when's the other shoe going to drop? And it never did. But, you know, just sticking with my boundaries. And luckily I haven't had to really deal with much with him because he's a wonderful guy and he's not an ounce of him is abusive. So it's been easy. But if it was to ever happen, like I know in my heart that I could stand up with my boundaries.
Cool.
Nice. All right. Okay. How has your addiction manifested itself in recovery?
Oh, well, definitely with shopping. Definitely. Online shopping, even just, like, zoning out and, like...
Shopping.
Yeah. Like, zoning out and, like, putting things into a cart, even if I don't buy them, like, wasting time doing that, like, dissociating and...
Wow.
Yeah.
I used to do that with Amazon.
Yeah.
Like, a few years ago.
I have, like, lists.
I would spend 4 hours, like, every night on Amazon.
Yeah.
Just putting shit in your shopping cart and then just, like, or not
making,
checking out.
Making wish
making
lists.
Making lists, yeah. Yeah,
just making different lists for different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I still have them.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I don't look at them because they're completely useless.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. Or going in a store and just associating and, like, looking out every aisle and just, like, not thinking about anything the whole time I'm in there. And then I'm like, I've been in here for 3 hours. Like, I need to leave.
Wow.
Yep.
So not even shopping, just spending like 3 hours in Target.
Mm-hmm. But I end up shopping
too. Yeah.
But like I haven't like amassed any like debt or anything. I always buy like, I don't spend like thousands of dollars, but it adds up.
Yeah. John, yeah. So it's like more behavioral than actual like detrimental.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a work in progress.
Yeah. I did not know that. Huh. All right, Eric, what you got?
All right. So, you were a cutter, I'm guessing.
Yes.
And you shot heroin.
Mm-hmm.
So, two very, like, ritualistic activities. Especially cutting. Cutting's, like, very at least that was like my favorite part of cutting. It's like the whole ritual of like everything in its right place and its order. But like, you know, shooting dope is like the same way.
Mm-hmm.
How do you break that habit?
Well, I don't know. Like, as far as cutting goes, I was actually just talking to someone at the meeting I was at before I came here about this. But cutting, like, I do not allow myself to think that I can, that's okay in mm-hmm. recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just group it in with you saying, like, if I cut, you know.
Did you struggle in early recovery with it?
I didn't do it in early recovery.
Okay.
But I've wanted to. I've wanted to recently. Mm-hmm. When I get really, really upset now, my first thought is not to go get high. It's to cut myself.
Yep.
But I know if I 100%. Allow that, then I'm on the road to relapse.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Breaking the habits, you know, with cutting, even with snorting stuff for years and the shooting up, that was just as hard as stopping the drug itself. I guess it's just with stopping and, like, applying principles of program to it.
Do you keep a clean date for the last time you self-harmed?
No. I mean, I used to. I used to keep clean dates for everything. So I had, like, 6 clean dates. Not for drugs, for different...
What, for, like, the last day you ate meat?
No, for, like, you know, high fructose corn syrup was, like, a big one that I actually think deserved a clean date.
That's hard.
It's hard.
That is very hard.
I mean, it's real hard.
Yeah, I avoid high fructose corn syrup as well.
Energy drinks had a clean date. Cigarettes had a clean date. Cutting had a clean date.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs had a clean date.
Do you have a clean date for your...
I was just about to say, I don't know what the date was of the last time I did it. I wish I did, because I totally would keep it, but I don't know. I just know, like, a roundabout when it was. Probably it was...
Mine's Groundhog's Day. That's how I remember it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
For self-harm?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Mine was, like, probably...
15? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was summer 2012 at some point.
I mean, yeah, I don't know anymore, man. It's just...
Do you do it like... Quick round table fucking question. You don't think it's a... because in, like, the rooms, you hear, oh, that's an outside issue. Does anybody in this room think it's an outside issue?
I don't believe anything's an outside issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
You know my opinion on this.
Yeah.
It's addiction.
Yeah.
It isn't drugs. It's addiction.
Exactly. Right. It is all a part of it, and it
not to single out a fellowship, but...
Not to single out any fellowship or any single person, but, like, it's a part of a greater mental disorder that we all have. Disease of the feelings, exactly. And,
it's anything, right? Like, even video games. Like, I've talked about, like...
Oh, yeah.
When I used to play video games, and I talked to someone... Who did I talk to recently? Who did the, who did the Visine, like I did.
So who was talking about that? Was, like, that Donnie?
No, it wasn't. Was it Donnie?
I think it was Donnie.
Where it was like, I used to play so much that, like, Donnie, my eyes would become dry, and in order to keep playing, you have to put Visine in your eyes to, lubricate them. Or else, you know, it becomes difficult. But, like, that's addiction.
Yeah.
If you have to,
that's fucking insane. I never did that. I'd be like, okay, it's time to stop.
No. You just buy Visine. You can keep going.
No. Oh, no. Uh-uh.
But, you know, that's an addiction. And, you know, anything that's an addiction should be, you know,
it has a ritual to it.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know.
I got one more question. Do you have one more?
Sure. Let's do one on one.
Okay. You go.
Me first?
Yeah, you first.
You're probably going to ask the step question because you, like, steal that one from me too.
Well, then fine.
No.
Son of a bitch.
Fine. Recovery has many different forms.
I should have asked this question. I should have stolen yours.
I love this question.
I know, it's a great question.
And I believe that recovery is unique to the individual. Like, there isn't a one size fits all approach.
Mm-hmm.
One fellowship might not work for another person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this book works for you, but that book might not work for me.
Mm-hmm.
What does recovery mean to you?
Oh, God, it's a loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. I think it just means, like, loving yourself and, like, living out of love instead of fear. And, like, giving back. I think service is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like growing from the horrible things that have happened to you and using them to help other people.
Yeah.
And just like, I don't know, like I'm not religious at all, but like God's will, whatever. Living in that instead of my self will and just trying to be like a better version of me, like as cliche as that sounds, but like just trying to constantly like improve and not go backwards in my behaviors. And I don't know. It's just, and recovery is just such a blessing. It's just, I'm so grateful I went through all of my using and all the abuse and all the crazy shit. Like, I would not take that back for the world now, because, like, I wouldn't have a life like I have now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know.
All right. Cool.
And my lesser question, I suppose. I should have went first.
They're all my questions, all the stock.
That so is bullshit. No.
If we go back through the podcast, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay, you go back through the podcast. He won't. All right. Have you worked all 12?
No.
Okay. How many of you?
What step are you on?
I'm on step 6.
Okay. Of the first 6 that you have worked, which has been your favorite?
Probably. I mean, I have like 2.
Okay. You gotta pick one.
Yeah. Really, I think. And this is not a very popular answer, but, and it was like a process and a half for me, but I think the 4th step I got the most out of, because nice. I got so honest and yeah. so freed from my secrets and all of that. Mm-hmm. And that was just such a crazy, amazing feeling. And I like put all, I procrastinated the hell out of the 4th step.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think that was like, that had the most. I mean, the 3rd step would have been my other answer because it was so freeing. But
I love 4.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Mm-hmm. I pick 3, he picks 10.
10's, yeah.
But that's, I think she's our first 4.
You are our first 4. I thought you were about to say 5 for a second when you're like, this is probably an unpopular one. I was like,
I was
like,
you're 5. I thought it was 5. I was thinking 5 or 2.
Right?
And I was like, 5 or 2.
Five. Yeah. Well, 2 kind of, I mean, I can feel 2. Yeah. Like, people would say 2, but no one's going to say 5.
Somebody will say 5.
Someone will one day.
But hopefully. If you're a listener out there and you come on here, just say 5 despite Eric.
Don't do that. I want to hear your reasoning, though.
I know. No, but that's a great answer. Like, I've been waiting
4
for some.
4 is good. I mean, how'd you work? Well, we guess I can't ask how you worked it. We'll talk about that.
Did you work it out of a guide?
Well, there's 2 guides.
Yeah, I did both.
You did both guides.
I actually was on the 4th step through 3 sponsors.
The green and
Which
gold?
Which guide did you like the best?
Wait, did you do the green and gold and the pamphlet?
Yes.
Okay. Did you like the pamphlet?
No.
No?
No.
Why?
Because it was annoying. And because the questions, like, some of the questions were like, oh my god, this doesn't make sense. It wasn't, like, horrible, but I worked, like, the first half of it with that.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it with the big one.
See, I love the pamphlet.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the guide, too. But the pamphlet was just, like, super in-depth.
Well, I only did, like, the resentments and the feelings part mm-hmm. in that. So, I don't know. I didn't do the whole thing. But, yeah, it was fine. But, like, out of the 2, I liked the big one better.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. I think we are about out of questions.
So yeah.
Okay.
We would like to thank Shelby for joining us today. Let's give her a golf clap.
Oh, she's joining in the golf clap. Yay.
First person to come to the golf hut. We're going to give you a quick second. Talk to everybody out there who's listening, who's struggling, who needs a voice of hope. What are you going to say for them?
Just give yourself a break, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if I could get clean, you can get clean. Just give yourself a chance. Try to have an open mind. Mm-hmm. You know, listen to what people are saying. And, you know, you don't have to get high no matter what. You know, just keep coming to meetings, keep talking to people, be honest with yourself, and life can be so great. So, you know, just give yourself a chance, basically.
All right. Perfect. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We're going to do a little outro here. Here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button.
Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. So again, thank you, Shelby. Everybody out there, keep listening. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, all that good stuff. Like, subscribe, share, invite your friends. Everybody, thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay clean.